Hello, beautiful people. This is the Michael Slate Show, and I am your guest host, Sansara Taylor. On today's show, we'll be sharing segments from the RNL Revolution Nothing Less show, which airs on YouTube. Let's begin.
Welcome to the RNL, the Revolution Nothing Less show. My name is Sansara Taylor, and I'm very pleased to be joined by Michelle Chai. Welcome, Michelle.
Hi, Sansara. I'm very excited to be here in studio with you, and welcome to you watching at home. This is the Revolution Nothing Less show. This show is about a real revolution to emancipate all of humanity, and we base ourselves on the new communism developed by the revolutionary leader Baba Vakin.
So Baba Vakin started this week by releasing two powerful new social media messages at Baba Vakin Official on all platforms. And message number 125, I just want to read the title. We wanted to start here in today's episode. He says, "Not the courts and not the Democratic Party. Decent people mobilizing massively and relentlessly are the force that must be relied on to defeat Trump MAGA fascism." And I want to underline that word, defeat, not just raise your objections, but actually defeat this fascism. And Baba Vakin starts this social media by invoking the famous words of Mario Savio from the free speech movement back in Berkeley, California in the 1960s, a movement that Baba Vakin was part of. We want to start where Baba Vakin starts.
To echo the moving words of Mario Savio, ringing down through the decades since the free speech movement at UC Berkeley in the 1960s, the machinery of the Trump fascist regime must be prevented from functioning until this regime is removed from power.
There's a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
All right, so that is a powerful quote from Mario Savio, and I think it's important. And it's righteous and on time that Baba Vakin cites this and invokes this. I mean, if that was true then, think about it. Is the operation of the machine odious enough to you now? When the president of the United States is bragging about building a concentration camp, giving it a cute nickname, Alligator Alcatraz, in the middle of a swamp, where he is rounding up, disappearing, overwhelmingly nonviolent immigrants who've been living in this country, in the interior of this country, many of them for decades, kidnapping them off the streets, disappearing them, throwing them into this camp, and then laughing and bragging about the fact that they, if they try to escape, they'll be eaten by alligators. Is that odious enough to you? Is it odious enough that they're selling merch? That Trump's fascist MAGA base is bragging about this, laughing about it, wearing it on hats and t-shirts?
Yeah, I just saw a headline this morning on the news about how the people that are being held in these detention centers are being fed food with worms in it. Think about how dehumanizing and how disgusting these sick motherfuckers that are running this show are. And on top of that, here you have this fascist, big, ugly fascist bill that just got passed, that on top of all of the terror, right, that we have seen of what they are coming down on our immigrant brothers and sisters, they just gave more funds to them. They have now, ICE has more funding than Israel. Now ICE has more funding than the Brazilian military. This is, and Tom Homan has publicly said, you've seen all of the things that we've done to immigrants, now it's going to get a lot worse. Is this odious enough for you?
Yeah, and speaking of this big blood-soaked fascist bill, they're going to throw 17 million people off their health care. People are going to die. Severely disabled people are going to die. They're going to even further gut women's access to reproductive care, abortion, birth control, especially in rural areas. So more women are going to be enslaved by forced motherhood. More women are going to die from botched miscarriages. And meanwhile, the Secretary of Agriculture came out and said, no, we're not going to spare agricultural workers from these mass ICE raids. We don't need to. There are 34 million able-bodied adult Medicaid recipients that we're going to go and put in the fields. This is some sick. Is this odious enough for you, taking disabled people off Medicaid and shoving them into the hot sun to slave in the fields while disappearing and rounding up and terrorizing whole peoples? Is this odious enough for you, or you want to wait for greater atrocities? Because they're coming.
That's right. This highlights even more so the words that we just heard from Bob Avakian and Mario Savio about the machinery. When that is your quote unquote business as usual in this society, that machinery of this fascist program being hammered into place must be prevented from functioning until this fascist regime is driven from power.
And this gets to what Bob Avakian drives home in this social media message, that there is only one force that can be relied on to do this. He goes through, look, the executive branch, the presidency, is controlled by Trump. Both houses of Congress are locked in by MAGA. We saw that with the big fascist bill they passed. They're in lockstep. The Supreme Court now is acting as an instrument of fascist atrocity. It's not an impartial body. It is weighted towards and facilitating Trump's fascism. And that's something that Bob Avakian goes into even more in depth in the next social media message, 126. And as for the Democratic Party, which a lot of people are still waiting for, yes, they're standing up, they're protesting, and they are, and it matters. But they're still waiting for the normal functioning of this society to kind of swing back and the Democrats to do something. And one of the things that Bob Avakian drives home is, in addition to the fact that waiting for the elections is way too late, in addition to the fact that you can't count on Donald Trump to respect an election he loses, Bob Avakian in this message makes clear that even when the Democrats have had the presidency, had the Senate, had the power to push back on this, they have refused to do so. I want to play part of what he says.
It is important to note how the Democratic Party leadership has refused to act in meaningful ways to oppose the fascists, particularly with regard to the crucial role of the Supreme Court. When Biden became president in 2021, with momentum from his decisive 2020 electoral victory, there were calls for him to expand the Supreme Court, adding justices in order to counter the way the court had been stacked with fascists. This would have been legal and constitutional, and it could have been possible. During the first years of Biden's presidency, the Democrats controlled the Senate, which has to approve appointments to the Supreme Court. But Biden refused to do this with the lame excuse that he didn't want to politicize the court when it was already obviously politicized by the fascist majority. This is typical of the Democratic Party as an institution. In its determination to maintain the orderly functioning and traditional norms of this system, it has repeatedly aided and facilitated the fascists who are trampling on those traditional norms in order to rule through an open dictatorship of lawless tyranny and terror.
Look, I think this example from Bob Avakian about Biden's refusal to expand the Supreme Court, it is so, like, you can't deny this. There were powerful calls, mass calls, when the Supreme Court was packed with fascists because Donald Trump illegitimately did that. It would have been completely legal and legitimate for Biden to expand the court. A lot of people were calling on him to do it. And because he didn't, because he refused, you have a Supreme Court that gutted women's right to abortion. You have a Supreme Court that said Donald Trump has immunity from breaking the law as long as he claims it's within his presidential powers. You have a Supreme Court that last week gave Trump the right to shred the Constitution and not be stopped by lower federal courts on a nationwide basis. This is an absolute atrocity, and it could have been prevented, but the Democrats didn't, and they won't. Because why exactly, like he says? Because they are more wed to the stability of their system, the smooth functioning of their system, and relying on the institutions of this system, even as the fascists are shredding and remaking those institutions. And so people have to wake up and stop waiting for these Democrats and stop hoping. Yes, individuals among them may play a role, may speak out, but as an institution, they are not going to wage the fight that needs to be waged. It is up to the people. Only the people in their massive numbers can be relied on to defeat this fascism.
Yeah, I mean, just being down on the ground with some of these people, being out in the streets, I've run into this, you know, people that see our slogan, the Trump fascist regime must go now. And they say, well, I like it. It's good sentiment, but it's not really going to happen, you know. And really, like, what they're arguing for is waiting until 2026 and 2028, you know. They don't think it's possible for us to do this. But think about, like, what we've just witnessed, like, not that long ago, like, last month, like, a few weeks back, you know. People very courageously in the face of these masked thugs that are literally violating people's rights, just kidnapping people off of the streets, people not backing down in the face of that. People pouring out on June 14th after, you know, all of this, you know, came to light, you know, and you're seeing this all over, right? People courageously, like, standing up in the face of that. This actually shows you the potential. So that argument that we can't do this is, like, completely disqualified, because people have shown the potential of how we can actually do this. So take that potential, and we actually have to take it to another level. We actually have to call for those millions in sustained protests to bring that machinery of this fascist regime to a halt.
And this is what Bob Avakian drives home at the conclusion of his message 125. Let's listen.
Ongoing protests and powerful mobilizations all over the country have been very important, and they show the potential for what must be done. But all this must make a leap soon to become a massive popular uprising, determined to actually defeat this fascist regime, uniting around the urgent demand: the Trump fascist regime must go now. This means no business as usual. It means protest and resistance building day after day, nonviolent but sustained and relentless, responding to repression by the fascist regime with even greater outpourings of resistance, uniting all who can be united in continually growing numbers, motivated by the necessary sense of urgency, aiming to create a profound political crisis and major shifts and realignments throughout society, including in the dominant institutions of power, so that this illegitimate fascist regime cannot function and is actually removed.
Mass resistance, nonviolent but relentless and massive and growing, so powerful that this illegitimate fascist regime cannot function and cannot remain in power. That needs to be the North Star that the millions who don't like what's happening, that's what they need to grab a hold of and fight to make real. And I want to say here that Bob Avakian is providing extraordinary leadership that millions need right now urgently. He's looking at this horror that is like this fast-moving nightmare coming at humanity, accelerating by the day, destroying lives and preparing the ground for much worse. And he's looking at the potential among the people who have, as you said, stepped forward in their millions again and again, but who are not yet setting their sights where they need to be set. And he's saying, here, this is where we need to go. This is how it gets done. This is how we can unseat this fascist regime and pivot history in a different direction. And there is no one else who is providing this kind of leadership with this kind of clarity and insight besides Bob Avakian. And we look back at things like Nazi Germany and wonder how people could have gone along with that. And we should learn the lessons. But one of the things is nobody had the kind of leadership Bob Avakian is providing for today. And we need to take this. We need to spread it. We need to act on it. And I want to point people to his next message, too, which we're not going to get into today. But you should go and listen to it at Bob Avakian Official, where he gets into, quote, more on why only the sustained, determined action of decent people can be relied on to defeat and remove the Trump fascist regime. And in this one, he really goes after the character of the Supreme Court as an instrument at this point of fascist atrocity.
That's right. So now we want to go to some footage from Refuse Fascism taking this responsibility to bring forward the necessary struggle to defeat this fascism. And this past week, Refuse Fascism called for a week of action, right? And culminating on July 4th in Washington, D.C. and in L.A., in the name of humanity, we declare our independence from Trump's fascist America. Trump must go now. So we're going to start with going to Washington, D.C.
Good afternoon, Washington, D.C. Yeah, yeah. We are all here today to say that in the name of humanity, we declare our independence from Trump's fascist America. But what does it mean? What does it mean for us to do this? What we are saying today, in the same way that the signers of the Declaration of Independence said on July 4th, 1776, is that this government does not represent us, and we are declaring our independence from it. This government does not represent us because Trump and his regime are fascists. And we, you and I, and everyone who agrees with us, are not fascists. Rather, we are citizens of the United States of America. We hold on to and are willing to fight for the highest ideals of our Constitution. And most importantly, and most basically, we are human beings. And we stand with all humanity. And we are committed to defending the dignity and worth of every person in our nation and around the world. These are heavy words, because these are heavy times. We see squads of masked men taking people off the streets. We see our police and our military being deployed against our fellow Americans to execute the policies of a fascist. We see our Supreme Court doing the bidding of a fascist and stripping away the rights of Americans and threatening the very foundation of the rule of law.
Shame! Shame!
We see a Congress that on one side of the aisle has bent the knee to Trump and the fascists, and on the other side of the aisle has shown themselves wildly incapable of meeting the moment in which we find ourselves. Woo! We see our government in lockstep with a genocidal regime that is slaughtering and starving the children of Gaza. And today, we are about to see a bill signed into law that will devastate the poor, the working class, and the middle class, while it wildly enriches the 1%, the oligarchs, and the transnational corporations. A bill that will provide the funding to build infrastructure for concentration camps here in the United States. A bill that will strip away fundamental protections for our fellow citizens, like their health care and food security. What we in the Refuse Fascism movement are asking you to do is to stand up, to join us, and to fight. To join us in a massive grassroots movement of nonviolent resistance. This can and must take a number of forms. Street protests, labor strikes, nonviolent civil disobedience, taking action after action with relentless ferocity until Trump and his regime are removed from power. I see many people, particularly current elected officials, who are talking about messaging tactics and how to win elections in 2026. What we are saying is that if we do not act now to remove Trump from power and the consolidation of power that we're seeing under his fascist regime, there will not be free and fair elections in 2026.
We gotta remember that these fascists are trying to take the country back to its origins, when slaveholders signed the Declaration. Declaration of Independence. Right. Slaveholders.
Right.
Signed the Constitution.
Right.
When they showed Woodrow Wilson, showed Birth of a Nation in the White House, a Klansman marched through D.C., sanctioned by the president, and they demanded, under the Woodrow Wilson administration, that people of color and anybody that was not white be removed from government. It was an attack upon DEI back under that administration. And here we are. History is repeating itself. And people don't realize that this is a part of a historical and continued struggle against racism and imperialism and violence.
Hello, everyone. My name is Nocha Diaz. I am a spokesperson for the RevCom Corps for the Emancipation of Humanity. Now, look, we're a revolutionary organization that is serious about making an actual revolution to get to a whole new way to live. We don't celebrate July 4th. We say this whole system is rotten and illegitimate, and we need and we demand a whole new way to live and a fundamentally different system. But as someone who understands that this system gave rise to Donald Trump, do not let anyone give you any excuse for standing aside against the fight to defeat Trump's MAGA fascism. No decent person can give any excuse or justification for waking up one more day and not doing everything we can to defeat the consolidation of fascism. No decent person should wake up one more day and accept that the streets are being flooded with masked, armed, militarized thugs systematically violating the law and due process of law to round people up who are brown and from a different country and put them in prisons with no due process, which makes them concentration camps. No decent person should be allowed to talk about opposing oppression, injustice, tyranny, exploitation, without talking about how we face the immediate, existential, urgent threat of a genocidal racist pumped up with a cave-dwelling machismo with a virulent hatred for women, LGBT people, on a rampage to deny the science of medicine, the science of climate change, who waves nuclear weapons and threatens to bully the whole world. Nobody can stand aside with the fight to stop that in the name of humanity. Anyone who tells you to prepare and divert the protests into getting ready for the next election, ask them, what have you allowed yourself to become? What are you allowing yourself to be turned into? As the Supreme Court gives this fascist dictator unchecked power, as he prepares to announce that this is his America, his military, and his future. This is why we come together today, as everyone has said, to declare our independence from Trump's fascist America. We come here together today to say no!
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 No! In the name of humanity!
In the name of humanity!
We refuse to accept!
We refuse to accept!
A fascist America!
A fascist America!
Trump must go now!
Trump must go now!
Trump must go now!
Trump must go now!
And let me just challenge you
with this. Our vision of freedom. Our vision of a world with rights and equalities should not be determined and limited by what was conceived of by actual slave owners. In the Rev Concord, we follow Bob Avakian, who's the architect of a new communism. Yes, communism. And the architect of a constitution with a vision of rights and freedoms far beyond what could be imagined under this system. And don't let them tell you about how communism is just scary, dictatorial madness, because that's what America is right now throughout its history, and which is threatening the existence of humanity. So to end, I challenge everybody who has the heart to fight for something worth fighting for, who has the head to look past the brainwash of American chauvinism, who doesn't care if people criticize you for refusing to accept the lie that this is the best of all possible worlds. And those who want to work with people just like you and nothing like you, who want to share the common cause of emancipating humanity, join with the Rev Comm Corps for the emancipation of humanity. Our leader, Bob Avakian, ends his New Year's statement, which you can get in this pamphlet, by saying this. We RevComs are working tirelessly toward the goal of finally putting an end to monstrous and completely unnecessary ruin and destruction of so many people here and all over the world. And in the interests of humanity as a whole, we are willing and prepared to make the necessary sacrifices and call on others to make the necessary sacrifices to carry out the revolution that can bring about a liberating leap forward on the road to fully putting an end to all this madness and needless suffering and bring about a world where human beings can at long last move beyond the mere struggle for individual survival as well as the heavy weight of thousands of years of oppressive relations and truly thrive as a world community of human beings, proceeding according to fundamental principles of cooperation and capable of being fit caretakers of the earth. So once again, we say this whole system is rotten and illegitimate, and we need and we demand a whole new way to live in a fundamentally different system. And everyone today comes together to say, in the name of humanity,
in the name of humanity,
we refuse to accept,
we refuse to accept,
fascist America.
A fascist America.
We who are the movement for freedom stand in solidarity, declaring our independence from fascism. Trump's fascism, Elon Musk's fascism, I don't care whose name, fascism, fascism, period. We declare our independence today, tomorrow, and forever.
My name is Ralph. I am a 20-year Navy veteran retired. 15 years federal government retired. That is over half my life. And this fascist regime must go. What is happening to our immigrants in America is wrong. We have alligator Alcatraz with alligators and boa constrictors all the way around the concentration camp. Now let's talk about this big ugly bill. ICE will become the biggest police force in our nation. And they're such cowards, they cannot take their damn mask off. I never wore a mask serving my government. What these assholes are doing is putting a knife in my heart.
You're right.
We are going to march to the White House. And we are going to declare our independence from a fascist America.
We are told to celebrate on the 4th of July the founding of a country rooted in freedom and liberty, throwing off the shackles of tyranny. And I'm glad that there are people here today who've spoken to this vision, who believe in it deeply, and who, for whom it motivates them to stand up. But I also share the view voiced by others of the understanding that this country, in fact, was founded on exploitation. Black people were considered property. Women had no rights. Native peoples were slaughtered. And in fact, in the founders' original Declaration of Independence, one of their complaints against the King of England, quiet as it's kept, is that he allegedly fomented rebellions among the slaves and the native peoples. But even if you believe in America as an idea founded in freedom, pursuing an ever more perfecting union, you have to say this year, things are different, this 4th of July. Now, I thought about it could be a perfect metaphor to say the 4th of July should be canceled this year. But in fact, it's not a metaphor. How many of you know that all across Southern California, 4th of July celebrations are in fact canceled? You guys know this? Then you want to know why? Because these are immigrant communities. And because of the terror, because of the kidnappings, because of the masked men, because of the unmarked vans, because of the wailing children, because of the cramped, overcrowded detention centers, because of the lack of food, the denial of lawyers, the medical deprivation, the lack of water, the 56 men in a cramped cell sharing one open pit toilet with no privacy. This is why the 4th of July has literally been canceled. People are terrified to leave their homes. The streets of bustling immigrant communities are silent. And it's not just in Los Angeles. It's happening in the shadows all across this country. We know about it in LA because people have stood up against it and forced us to see. But it is happening everywhere. This morning, I transcribed the words of a young girl from Mississippi. She looked to me like maybe 10 years old, and she was wiping away tears as furiously as she could with both her hands as she spoke. She said, "I want my dad." She said, "The Hispanic people are not doing nothing bad. Please open the doors to the jail. I'm not gonna have nothing. It's my first day of school for me. My dad bought me everything for me to live over here, the rent. And now I don't know what I'm going to eat. And I am so lonely right now. I need my dad to help me. He's not a criminal. Governments, please put your heart. Let my parents be free with everyone else. Please don't leave the child with this crying." This is why July 4th is literally canceled. This is why the streets of immigrant neighborhoods across this country have fallen silent. And I want to ask you, how different is this really than the early days of Hitler? Jewish families hid indoors. They pulled their children from school. They stayed in from synagogue. They shuttered their businesses. Many of them, long before they were fully deported and exterminated, saw their neighborhoods fall silent. And today, just like then, this dehumanization and violent disappearing of one section of society is a battering ram for a whole larger fascist program. Yep. Fascism, that's what you gotta call it. Not authoritarianism, not autocracy, fascism. It has meaning, and it's not a curse word. Fascism is a qualitative change in the form of government. It means no rights, no dissent, no recourse in the courts, just open terroristic dictatorship, brute force. And in this country, with its history and its roots, fascism is enforcing a program of open, aggressive reassertion of white supremacy, of vitriolic, violent hatred of women, and LGBT people, of xenophobic, genocidal hatred of foreigners and America First chauvinism. Fascism is the Supreme Court giving Trump a blank check to shred the Constitution, as long as people don't sue fast enough or not in the right jurisdiction, which they said a week ago. Fascism is the Supreme Court saying Trump can break the law because he's president, which they said a year ago. Fascism is erasing trans people and forcing women to have children against their will. Fascism is the president threatening governors, vanishing protesters, silencing students, disappearing rights. Fascism is the military occupying the streets of this country, political assassinations, illegal acts of unprovoked, aggressive war. And we've seen all this and more just in the first 5 months. The lesson of history, beautiful people, the lesson of history is that fascism must be defeated before it becomes too late, before it is fully consolidated, before the space for people to stand up is shut down completely, before everybody of conscience has been rounded up or intimidated into silence. That time is now.
Let's go now.
As they told you, my name is Sansara Taylor, and I'm one of the co-initiators of refusefascism.org. We founded this back in 2016. Y'all can cheer for that. Refusefascism.org's mission is to unite everybody who can possibly be united from very different political perspectives and backgrounds and walks of life to stand up together, to pour into the streets non-violently, but with determination and not stopping, growing till we become millions and create the level of profound political crisis across this country, such that Donald Trump cannot govern this country, cannot impose his fascist program, and cannot even hang on to the reins of power. This is what humanity needs from us. And so I call on every single one of you here today to join refusefascism.org. Now, I personally come to this movement as a very proud follower of the revolutionary leader, Bob Avakian.
Yeah.
He is the architect of the new communism, a whole new framework for human emancipation. And I say this openly because there are people on the internet and other places who will tell you to be scared of this. And they'll tell you this is some kind of secret hidden agenda of refuse fascism. No, it is not. It is an agenda that those of us in refuse fascism who want revolution are very open about. I am very open about it, and I'm happy to stand with people who don't share this larger agenda, because we do share the agenda of defeating fascism. I have this view because I have become convinced that this country, as it was founded in genocide and slavery, and as it is enshrined in the U.S. Constitution, has always been about oppression and exploitation, and this can't be reformed away, and we need a revolution. I've become convinced that we can live a whole better way. And I've read the Constitution for the New Socialist Republic in North America that Bob Avakian wrote, for a whole new way to live, a fundamentally different system where the rights of the people are guaranteed, including the most fundamental right of all, the right of the people to have the determining role in the direction of society, to join in debate and discussing the way forward, to dig up all oppression, all exploitation, all forms of enforced ignorance, not just here, but all over the world. I think this is possible, and I invite you to learn about it. Now, I want to be clear, you don't have to agree with me to be in the Refuse Fascism movement. You don't even have to look into what I'm talking about. I hope you do. I encourage you to. But if you're going to form an opinion about it, I insist that you have the integrity to do so based on engaging what Bob Avakian actually has put forward, what we actually stand for, and not based on snark and rumor and red baiting and anti-communist slander and divide and conquer tactics, which are all too real, all too widespread, and all too useful to those who want to crush this movement. I'm sorry, waiting for the next elections to deal with Trump MAGA fascism is like seeing a man collapse in the street of a heart attack. He's clutching at his chest, he's gasping for air, he's lying on the ground, and instead of calling an ambulance, you say, oh, there's nothing to worry about. He has a routine checkup scheduled in a year and a half. No, there's an emergency now. He needs CPR now. And right now, sisters and brothers, beautiful people, our rights, the lives of millions of immigrants, the future of humanity is in cardiac arrest. We cannot wait a year and a half. We have to act now.
Now!
Think about what you've seen in Los Angeles. Now imagine if instead of dozens or hundreds of people every time ICE shows up, if it was thousands or tens of thousands.
Yeah.
Imagine if every institution that is carrying out Trump's fascism was surrounded by truly massive numbers of people, non-violently. But this would overwhelm things. They'd be impeded from carrying out their terror. And imagine how it would deepen the divides within those institutions and strengthen those who are silent now but who hate what Trump is doing to stand up and resist themselves. And imagine how it would give backbone to even some weak-kneed politicians to start to stand up. And imagine how that would give the people more strength. And imagine how the acts of repression and violence from the regime, if people stood up and were not provoked by them, but also didn't back down, could lead more people to be outraged and inspired to join them. Imagine how this could grow, and imagine if through it all, the demand were being raised that Trump must go now.
Trump must go now.
Because millions were coming to understand that unless and until this regime is removed from power, it will overwhelm even the most powerful opposition. It will move on many fronts more than we can possibly keep up with. But if we get out in the streets and demand that single unifying demand, he must go now, we can overwhelm the source and we can change the whole direction of this country and drive him from power. So yes, this will take courage. And yes, this will take sacrifice, but it is worth it. I want to ask you to think once again about those 8 men being shipped today in shackles to South Sudan. I want you to think about that 10-year-old girl crying for her father. And I want you to multiply that times millions and think about what this world will be like if we let this Trump fascist regime stay in power. And now I want you to think about the joy and the strength and the unity and the power and the hopes for the future to go even further that we could bring into being by standing up together, by rallying our friends and neighbors, by waking others up and staying in these streets and not stopping until this whole society is brought to a halt and Trump is removed.
Yeah, so this was a really beautiful day in Washington, D.C. And like you see, there are nearly 1,000 people rallied, marched to the White House, raised a chant, Trump must go now, at the very moment he was signing his big fascist blood-soaked bill. And this resistance needs to grow. 1,000 people is not nearly enough. It's not nearly the scale that's needed. But you saw there, and we're going to show more soon from Los Angeles and a little bit more from D.C. a little later in the show, what you saw was important voices coming together around the mission of refusefascism.org to unite all who can be united, to stand up against this regime in nonviolent mass civil uprising in different ways, precisely to bring the society to a halt and create the kind of crisis, political crisis, where Trump cannot remain in power. And so we're, like I said, we'll share more from the other protests. But we wanted to pull out right now one part of this that you heard from Noche Diaz, who is a leader of the RevCom Corps for the Emancipation of Humanity, which you're also a member of.
Yeah. So we heard a lot of important things on from the different speeches. But one thing we wanted to pull out and highlight was Noche Diaz spoke about the Constitution for the New Socialist Republic in North America. And here we want to go to a clip from the interview with the revolutionary leader, Bob Avakian, back in 2022, where he's speaking to what he was working on when he was writing this constitution. So let's go to that.
you've mentioned, and it's come up a number of times already, the Constitution for the New Socialist Republic in North America that you authored. And we wanted to ask, first of all, it's an amazing document, and there's never been anything like this before, especially at all, but especially before the seizure of power. Why did you feel it was important to write it? And is there anything that you had in mind, any particular problems or questions you had in mind when you were writing it that you would suggest for people who are newly reading it that they also think about as they're reading it, or people returning to it?
Well, you know, I just did it because I didn't have anything else to do. No, I mean, look, you know, there's a need for people to have a clear sense, a concrete sense, as well as a, you know, a lofty vision of what it is we're aiming for. You know, sometimes the critics say, oh, you know, you're always complaining about what you don't like. You don't like this. You don't like that. You don't like it. But you never can say what you're for. Well, you know, here it is, concretized what we're for. I mean, first of all, even before this Constitution was written, we were very clear what we were for in broad strokes and, in, you know, in basic terms. But I felt there was a need, you know, coming off of summing up a lot of experience of previous, you know, socialist society in China and the Soviet Union before it, before, you know, the revolutions there were overturned and capitalism was restored in the Soviet Union in the 1950s and in China in the 1970s. In summing up this, I felt there was a need to make another leap in terms of what's, you know, we're talking about socialist state power. What socialist state power and the socialist society that it was, bringing the basis for and reinforcing, what should that society actually look like in as living a way as possible so that people could get a concrete sense? And also so we'd have a guideline. You know, what do you do after you make a revolution? What do you do on day one, people often raise? Well, this is a, you know, look, in the actual event of a successful revolution, there'll be a lot of new questions that'll get thrown up. Some things may turn out to be different than the way they're, you know, in some particulars of that constitution. But it does lay out the basic principles and a lot of very concrete guidelines and institutional, you know, procedures and institutional or you know, organizations that could actually guide people on how to begin the day after seizing power, so to speak, and actually transforming society in a way that would be emancipating. So that was, you know, why I recognized the need for that. And I did have certain questions in mind. I did a lot of study of, you know, I've been wrestling with this question for several years, like, what should be the character? You know, we can learn from China, we can learn from the Soviet Union, but we can also see certain shortcomings. What should be the character of the actual system, of the actual state power, of the actual institutions, from the political, governmental institutions to the culture, to the educational system, and so on? What should be their actual character? What can we learn from past experience? Where can we see that things need to be done differently and better? So that was a sort of a general concern. I did, you know, I did a lot of reading. I studied, you know, I looked into the constitutions of the Soviet Union, particularly from the 1930s. I went back and looked at the Chinese constitutions during the Cultural Revolution in the 60s and 70s. I went and I read the Magna Carta. I read the, you know, the rights of the French document, the Rights of Man. You know, I read the U.S. Constitution again to, you know, to try to get a sense of the contradictions that they were dealing with, even though that was a different system, as well as the constitutions that were actually socialist constitutions. And there is, as I point out in the book, The New Communism, there is one, you know, essential and basic contradiction that I felt was important to speak to and to lay the basis for dealing with in a somewhat different way than it had been done in the history of socialist societies previously. And that is the contradiction that we can scientifically determine that communism, the achievement of communism and the revolution that's necessary for that, is objectively in the interest of the broad masses of people of the world, the overwhelming majority of humanity. But, and we can learn this from the experience of previous socialist societies, at any given time, not everybody in whose interest that revolution is wanted at any given time. And yet, that's one problem. And yet, at the same time, it would be absolutely criminal to make a revolution and then hand power back to the people you just overthrew and let them subject the masses of people to all the horrors that you just made a revolution to do away with. And besides that sort of obvious thing, there's also the question that, you know, at a given point, what if a significant section of the masses has become, you know, disoriented, you know, has felt that the revolution is not really doing what they want it to do and so on, and they're sort of open to being persuaded, you know, in some subtle or even overt ways to go back to the old system. And then you have the problem, okay, it took us however many decades to actually overthrow the system. Now we're going to just let people, you know, take us back to the old system and we have to start all over again. No. So how do you handle this contradiction that this is in the objective interest of the masses of people, but not all of them want it at any given time? Well, you cannot handle this correctly, and it's not going to lead to a good result if you, in effect, put guns in the backs of the masses and try to force march them to communism because, quote unquote, it's in your interests. So what this Constitution is doing is providing the institutionalized means where, yes, if, say, 90% of the people wanted to go back to capitalism, they could, through the institutions of this system and in its electoral processes, actually effect that. But it would take an overwhelming majority of people to do that. Meanwhile, the institutional basis provides the means for continuing on the road of socialism without having to put guns at the back of the masses, including those who become disaffected temporarily. You know, it's like a hangover. You know, masses of people get swayed. We want to go back to capitalism. And then they wake up and they say, man, I got a fucking hangover. I forgot what this fucking capitalism was like. What the fuck was I thinking of, you know? So this is a way of, like, not having that determine things. So that the way the electoral processes are set up, you know, it does serve to reinforce the existing system while allowing the masses to have a lot of sway in determining who their leader, a lot of voice in terms of who their actual leaders are. And it even allows for the possibility that people could vote to go back to capitalism if there were an overwhelming majority. But it provides institutional means so that people don't suffer from that kind of hangover. So that, but on the other hand, you're not force marching them to communism with guns at their back. So they, you know, they're, you know, some of these anarchists and others say, well, you know, this is all a sham. You know, you, to use the old saying, you giveth with one hand and taketh away with the other. You know, you pretend, you let the people vote, but you stack the voting so it goes the way you want it to. Well, yes. I mean the point is that there is no, as long as you have a society divided into different classes, into, you know, oppressive social relations that you're still striving to overcome, there's no such thing as pure democracy. You know, they always talk about free and fair elections. They called the election in Iraq when they were occupying the country with their own military a free and fair election. But even when you're not, don't have guns at your back, or the, you know, police aren't coming to your door and dragging you out and telling you how to vote, you're being influenced by all the institutions of society and by the underlying operation of the economic system and the prevailing social relations. You're being influenced that the only reasonable thing to do is to vote to reinforce the system. That's what happens under capitalism when people go vote. You know, it even gets to ridiculous dimensions. I saw, you know, that, well, anyway, Bill Maher, I saw him on TV, and you know, I was going to say that asshole, but you know, he has one or two points, but he's mainly just really, you know, having a bad influence. And he's trying to convince people that Mike Pence is not so bad because the alternative is Donald Trump. And he goes into this whole thing about when you take an SAT test, at least when I took it, they used to ask you a question. They say, choose the best option out of this set of questions. And then he used that to say, you see, what the way these reformists always talk, we can't make the perfect the enemy of the good. Therefore, we have to choose the least bad alternative. Well, Pence may be this and that. He's a Christian fundamentalist, blah, blah, blah. But he's not trying to pull off a coup. And, you know, he's trying to use the mechanisms of the system to institute a fascist theocracy, okay? And it, wow, I say, Bill Maher, talk about a poverty of imagination and the lowered sights and limits of what you see as possible, that you're posing to people the choice between Donald Trump and Mike Pence. But the fact is, there's a certain logic to what Bill Maher is saying there. You got to work within the reality of the system as it is. You got to make the choices. Yeah, okay, you know, you could vote for some radical, but it's not going to get any votes. It's not going to mean anything. You're just going to take votes away from the good Democrat, or maybe from Mike Pence. But this is, you know, this is what happens under this system. There's no such thing as a free and fair election, you know, in the sense of being free of the influence of the dominant relations and institutions in the society. And yes, in this Constitution, that's also true. But it, at the same time, in order to avoid this whole thing of you know, force marching to people to communism with guns at their back, it is institutionalizing the means for a tremendous amount of dissent, like I said, cultural, intellectual ferment, so the masses can thrash out a lot of questions without losing the whole thing and then waking up the day after and say, what the fuck were we doing? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, think of everything, all the reasons why people tell us this revolution will never happen. Are they pointing at nothing real? Of course not. They're pointing at very real things. The power of this system in terms of its armed force and its power in terms of molding people's thinking. You know, so, you know, it's very, very difficult to actually make a revolution. That's why people say to us, you'll never happen. It's too much going against it. It's too powerful. Too many people are fucked up. People are not thinking that way. The middle class is too big, and so on and so forth. Well, all that's real, and all that has to be overcome. And imagine you overcome all that, and then you encounter problems with building a new economy. You encounter problems in working out the, you know, the non-oppressive relations among different sections of the people. And people become disaffected, and they forgot what it was like being under capitalism. And they want to temporarily go back. And then a week later, they say, could you revolutionaries please come around again and start organizing us to get back to the other system we had, which we forgot was much better? So this is why it's institutionalized that there are processes for people to actually choose their leaders to a very significant extent, but within a definite framework. And there are institutionalized means and provisions and encouragement of and for dissent and cultural and intellectual ferment, but within a certain framework, just as democracy is practiced within a certain framework, a very different framework within this society and this system. I would say the central problem, that a historical problem of the communist revolution that it's speaking to and providing the institutional means to deal with, is this contradiction that this revolution and advance to communism in the world is in the fundamental interest of the masses of people, but not all the people want it all the time. But you can't solve that by force marching people to, you know, on that row with guns at their back. So this is the institutional means for resolving that contradiction in a way that doesn't require you or force you to do that, but actually corresponds to what are the fundamental interests of the masses of people, which is why they would have risen up under your leadership to make a revolution in the first place.